welcome back to the Garden with Joy and Holly Radio Show. Happy to have you along. Holly, let's go to the hotline and bring in our guest for this week.
Joseph Lofthouse adopted the principles adaptation agriculture in response to the harsh growing conditions in high altitude, short season desert gardens. Instead of relying on expensive poisons, labor, and material to coddle the plants, he encourages genetic diversity, cross-pollination, and survival of the fittest, allowing the plants to adapt themselves to the current and ever-changing ecosystem, thus simplifying farming and seed saving. Better adapted varieties taste better. Joseph authored Landrace Gardening, Food Security Through Biodiversity and Promiscuous Population. Welcome to the program, Joseph.
Thank you, Holly.
Well, Joseph, I want to thank you for taking time not only to educate Holly and myself, but all of our listeners. And I want to start with this. Many people do not understand what genetic diversity is, and some people may think that is a bad thing. Can you explain what that means, what that term means?
Sure. I might explain it as genetic diversity represents a crop's ability to change with the ecosystem. So if a new bug comes along or in a new disease, if the population has genetic diversity, then it can figure out how to deal with that new problem that it's experiencing.
So go ahead.
So like modern crops are highly inbred, and we talk about the heirlooms, and they were a great variety like 50 years ago on a farm in Ohio. But then when they come out to my place and there's totally different conditions, they don't grow for me. And they've been inbred for 50 years, and so they've forgotten all of that, what they knew about dealing with the bugs over there and the soil, and so it's really difficult. And then the hybrids, if you take two of those heirlooms and cross them together, you get a hybrid. And when they came to my place, again, they didn't have what they needed because the hybrids were bred with the idea of we're going to use poisons and coddle the plants. And that's not something I want to do in my garden.
Absolutely. So can you explain to us what Landrace Gardening is?
Yeah, so Landrace Gardening advocates a return to traditional seed-keeping practices and to minimizing labor and materials so that the plants can become locally adapted. And when they're locally adapted, then they can really thrive with less inputs. And it just makes my life easier as a farmer.
So when we talk about, and I'm going to go back to genetic diversity, when we talk about that in the grand scheme of it, so if the plants are genetically diversified and you save them, does that mean that they are, you can basically give them away, sell them, whatever, to pretty much any gardener, and they are going to be much stronger in a different geographical area than what you were speaking about, the hybrids or the heirlooms?
Yeah, so what happens, for example, is if I have crops that are adapted to the local ecosystem, to my high altitude, to the desert, to the low humidity, to the sunlight that's all day long, every day, they do a lot better for my community than the seeds that come from China or that come from Oregon, which is damp and overcast where they've been growing the seed. And so if we can be growing local seeds that also have genetic diversity, then they can really figure out for themselves how to solve those problems that we were trying to solve with labor and materials and poisons or whatever it was we were trying to use to coddle them.
And genetic diversity has been going on in nature since the beginning of time.
Yes, but about 60 years ago, the seed industry decided that they were going to start inbreeding plants. And so basically, every time you cross a plant to itself, you end up losing half of the remaining genetic diversity in that plant or in that population. And so pretty soon you get plants that forget how to grow because they're so inbred.
That's very interesting. So can you tell us more about your book, Land Race Gardening, Food Security Through Biodiversity and Promiscuous Population? Perhaps just a little quick synopsis and whatever would encourage our readers to pick up a copy.
Yeah, so one of the major things that my book does is it advocates dropping all of those rules that interfere with the person's ability to save seeds. And so it really gives a lot of comfort to people that they can let the seeds grow more in a natural system and they're going to thrive. The book covers like corn, beans, squash, tomatoes, grains, animals, and gives cooking tips and seed saving tips. It represents, decades of my life. And the other thing it advocates is having joy in the garden, singing and dancing, and just enjoying ourselves rather than getting so caught up in being burdened with all the rules that other people want to put on us about how we should garden.
And I would absolutely agree. There is, I think a lot of people decide that they want to garden and it has to be, the prettiest.
It has to meet a certain criteria for them to be. Yeah.
And they lose sight of the reason why they started in the first place was to have an enjoyable hobby. And all of a sudden now they're stressing out because one weed is growing or something. And it's
the neighbor's planting before I am. I've got to plant now.
Yeah. And it becomes keeping up with the Joneses versus really observing and enjoying nature. And now you're like angry at some squirrel when that was the squirrel's home in the first place. And yeah.
Right.
Soil erosion can be a big problem on large agricultural farms, but also in backyards, and people may not be aware of the type of erosion issues that they may see in their own backyard garden. What are some tips that you can offer to lessen the impact in those backyard gardens?
Yeah, so I'm blessed in my area to live in the desert, and I don't have much wind, and I don't have much water to be washing the soil away. But in general, if you keep the ground covered, either with plants or with snow in my case, then you can really keep the soil closer to home.
Yeah, we stress on the program, everything in nature that has soil, it's covered in some form or fashion except for sand in the desert. So nature is trying to tell us, here's what you got to do, Goofy, cover your soil in the backyard.
Right. And I allow a tremendous amount of weeds to grow in my garden. And I think of it as a multi-species, self-regenerating cover crop.
That's interesting because people would, keep weeds out and you allow them to grow for this reason.
Right.
I understand that. I don't hate the weeds, but
they hold the soil in.
They hold the soil in, and as soon as you start pulling, you see it happen, right? You pull these weeds, and there's just dirt clinging to the roots of the weeds. And I know that for a lot of people, they feel it's unsightly, but I totally understand
that's one of those things that you were talking about, Joseph. Yeah. That people are you got to have a weed free gardener. You're not a good gardener,
right? And so I went the other way. I let the weeds grow. And the plants have to be strong enough to outcompete the weeds.
Yeah.
And that way, I greatly minimize the labor that I have to put into my garden.
And I like that concept because it is the strongest, and just like your book says, the promiscuous population. And that's what's going on, is that you have these weeds that are doing their thing, and then the plants are hopefully growing or learn to grow. And maybe it might take a couple seasons in that particular ecosystem, but the strongest ones do survive. So,
exactly. And then the other thing that I've noticed by using genetic diversity and tasting every plant before I save seeds from it is after a few generations, I get crops that just taste lovely and just make my heart sing for the flavor.
Yeah, that's something we've lost in the varieties we have now.
Mm-hmm.
So do you know much about desert foraging, since you do live out there and you are amongst a lot of the
Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to ask, because we've talked to foragers, but they're usually more like in the Midwest or the Northeast, and I know this is a totally different climate than that, so if you want to talk about that at all.
Yeah, so I eat a lot of foraged vegetables and mushrooms, because if I go foraging first thing in the spring or when the fall rains are coming, that's good times to forage. I don't do much foraging during the hottest part of the summer because the plants are kind of tough then. But like I eat oyster mushrooms and morels, and I eat a lot of weeds out of my garden, like wild lettuce and purslane and lamb's quarters and amaranth, that are just delightful vegetables, and they take care of themselves. I don't ever have to plant them. And right now I'm eating like the desert parsley and the glacier lilies and the violets are really good right now.
Well, what was gardening and plants something you had always been interested in growing up, or was there an aha moment somewhere in your life where you were exposed to this and then that love developed?
So I grew up on a 6th-generation family farm, and we fed ourselves off of the farm. And so it was something that I always did. But then I took a career as a chemist and moved to the big city, and I was working to develop pesticides. And they were just nasty, evil things. And I had a mental health breakdown over it, and decided to return to farming about 20 years ago or something. And because that was the farthest thing away from the other life that I could imagine. And I'm much happier being a farmer than I was being a chemist.
Certainly being outdoors is one, and not being affected by the chemicals is another aspect of the joy that you're experiencing.
Right.
And I have to commend you. Not many people talk about their mental health, and it's becoming more common these days, but a lot of people would have, you know, just powered through or stuck it out or even...
been ashamed to say anything.
Yeah, been ashamed to say anything. And I know I had to leave a tough job for my mental health once, and I was shamed because of it, and I'm glad I left it. It actually led me to meet Joey, but yeah, I know it's difficult, and... it's good, so I commend you for that.
Oh, thank you. Well, partly I'm becoming a little bit of a celebrity right now because I wrote my book, and people are wanting to know the story, and it's like, okay, I can own this, and, you know, and just it is what it is. I wouldn't have written the book without having went through that crisis.
Right. Well, speaking of that book, how can people find the book, find you online, and connect with you?
So the book is widely available, like including Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Lulu. And you can contact me or get my book or subscribe to my newsletter at lofthouse.com, LOFTHOUSE. And I spend a lot of my online time at the goingtoseed.org, where I have a course about adaptation agriculture. There's an online community and seed share there. People can get my seeds from Experimental Farm Network, Going to Seed, or the Buffalo Seed Company.
Well, Joseph,
oh, and I should mention Giving Ground Seeds as well.
All right. Well, Joseph, we greatly appreciate the time you've offered Holly and myself and the education you provided, not only us, but all of our listeners. We greatly appreciate that and wish you the best in your journey.
Thank you, Joey and Holly.
Absolutely. Goodbye.